Well, good morning. How are you all doing today? Now, I don't know if any of you noticed, but there are like a ton of sweets back there. Yeah. It is Valentine's, getting close to it. So you're probably all wired by now. Today we'll be digging into Habakkuk chapter 3, starting at verse 1 in just a little bit. But before I get into that, I want to kind of add an addendum or clarify a little bit of stuff. Some of us, as we've been going through Habakkuk, have been talking about the messages, and we've been able to talk in small group and on kind of a more personal level. And through this series, we've been talking a lot about 9/11, you know, the planes that flew into the towers and why God allowed that to happen. We've talked about the shooting that took place in Sandy Hook, the shooting that took place at our own mall here around December time. If you want to, you can throw in the shooting stuff that's taking place down in Los Angeles right now with the police officers. But in some of the discussions and some of the messages, I've asked questions like, why does God allow these attacks to take place? And last week, in one of them, I was talking about Islam. And I asked the question, is it possible that God is using the militant Islams to chastise or to correct Christians here in America? And even with the World Trade Center stuff. And some of those questions are asked to cause you to think a little bit. And it's tough. It's tough because if that's truly the case, and we've been talking about God is raising up the Babylonians, in Habakkuk's time, God was raising up the Babylonians to chastise Judah at the time. Well, if that's the case, then we don't have free will. We don't have a choice in the matter. But that's not necessarily the case. I believe that God loves us. And that he gives us a choice. And so why did the planes fly into the World Trade Center? Why did God allow the shootings to take place? Because there's evil in the world. There's pain and suffering. And because he loves us enough to give us a choice, even when they're bad choices. And we get hurt by them. And I wanted to kind of throw that in there because sometimes in the messages, it sounds a lot like I'm saying we don't have a choice in the matter. And God is just up there and we're just little puppets and he's pulling the strings. And this is where it gets hard, and we can get into a great big long theological talk on this, because God is in the past and he's in the present. He's also in the future. He knows the choices I'm going to make. And this morning when I got up and I chose to get dressed and put these clothes on, he already knew what I was going to be putting on before I did. But to me, it was still a choice, and it wasn't an easy one. It probably wasn't a good one either, but it was my choice. So take some of what is said with a grain of salt. Some of it is there to cause you to think a little bit. Some of it is there to maybe challenge you. And some of you have come up to me and spoken with me, and I appreciate that. We've had kind of indirect or personal contact on it. And so that's where it is as we continue to talk about Habakkuk and where he was. So we're going to continue today in Habakkuk, and we're looking at chapter 3, and Aaron's going to put the words up here for you. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 15, they read like this, in a message that I've titled, Sharpening the Focus of Your Faith. Now, if you have your handout, it actually says strengthening, and that's my fault. I gave Don the wrong thing. The one day that Don gets the stuff done early, and I got it wrong. But it is sharpening the focus of your faith. Habakkuk chapter 3, verses 1 through 15, it read like this. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet in Shigayonath. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, O Lord. Renew them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Timon, the Holy One from Mount Paran. Selah. Selah is kind of take a break, take a pause a little bit. His glory covered the heavens and his praise filled the earth. His splendor was like the sunrise. Rays flashed from his hand. Where his power was hidden, plague went before him. Pestilence followed his steps. He stood and shook the earth. He looked and made the nations tremble. The ancient mountains crumbled and the age-old hills collapsed. His ways are eternal. I saw the tent of Cushan in distress, the dwellings of Midian in anguish. Were you angry with the rivers, O Lord? Was your wrath against the streams? Did you rage against the sea when you rode with your horses and your victorious chariots? You uncovered your bow. You called for many arrows. Selah. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and wreathed torrents of water swept by. The deep roared and lifted its waves on high. Sun and moon stood still in the heavens at the glint of your flying arrows, at the lightning of your flashing spear. In wrath, you strode through the earth, and in anger, you threshed the nations. You came out to deliver your people, to save your anointed one. You crushed the leader of the land of wickedness. You stripped him from head to foot. Selah. With his own spear, you pierced his head. When his warriors stormed out to scatter us, gloating as though about to devour the wretched who were in hiding. You trampled the sea with your horses, churning the great waters. We live in a very impatient society. We have all been programmed to get whatever we want, whenever we want it. You see, it is the product that counts. Because of that, the process is often lost. The Russian comedian Yakov Smirnoff, some of you may have heard about him, you may know who he is. He made a point about this in one of his dialogues. Smirnoff is the one who kind of always ended his jokes with the saying, "What a country." And that's my best Russian accent that I can get in there, okay? He told the story of when he first visited a supermarket in America. And he was walking down the aisles, and as he's going down the aisles, he sees powdered milk. You see, you just add water and you have instant milk. And as he continued down the aisles, one of the aisles he saw powdered soup. You just add water and instant soup. He continues walking through the supermarket and he comes across powdered breakfast. Breakfast powder. See, you just add water and you have instant breakfast. As he's getting near the end of the tour of the supermarket, he's going down the last aisle and he sees baby powder. And he goes, "Wow, what a country." Although instant everything might be at your fingertips when it comes to our food, it's not usually that way when it comes to our spiritual growth. It certainly was not like that for the prophet Habakkuk. As we near the end of the study of this Old Testament book, we're on message number 6. We have one more to go after this. I hope that you've been able to see this process of change that is taking place in the life of this prophet. See, God has been tenderly and lovingly taking Habakkuk from a place of fear to faith. You can see the change in Habakkuk by looking at the change in his prayers. Habakkuk had initially responded to the silence of God by questioning God. But now as we come to these three verses, as we come to chapter 3, verse 2, sorry about that, we find Habakkuk standing in reverence before God. See, the book of Proverbs, it tells us the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Sincere reverence for God is that necessary starting point in life if we are ever going to respond to life's problems and difficulties properly. In C.S. Lewis's well-known book, The Chronicles of Narnia, he tells the story of how four children come into the land of Narnia. See, in Narnia, all of the animals talk, but they're under the evil spell of the White Witch. They hear about this lion named Aslan. See, Aslan is the Christ figure in Lewis's writings. With the children getting ready to meet Aslan for the first time, they have a conversation with the beaver family about him. And in that conversation, they learn about reverence. The conversation begins with Susan asking Mr. Beaver, "Who is Aslan?" "Who is Aslan?" said Mr. Beaver. "Why, don't you know? He's the king. He's the lord of the whole wood. But he's not often here, you understand. But the word has reached us that he has come back. And he'll settle the White Witch, all right. He'll put all to right, as it says in the old rhyme in these parts. Wrong will be right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. When he bares his teeth, winter meets its death. And when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. Is he a man? Asked Lucy. Aslan a man? Said Mr. Beaver sternly. Certainly not, I tell you. He is the king of the woods, the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who is the king of beasts? Aslan is not just a lion. He is the lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he safe? I shall feel rather nervous meeting a lion. That you will, dearie. And make no mistake, said Mrs. Beaver. If there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either brave, braver than most, or they're just silly. Then he isn't safe, said Lucy. Safe, said Mr. Beaver. Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he is good. He's the king, I tell you. You mustn't press him. See, Habakkuk had been pressing the King of Kings with his questions. But now all of that had come to a stop for Habakkuk. See, his eyes are now open to see God as the good, sovereign King of the universe, ruling over all things from his heavenly throne to accomplish his perfect purposes. Even those things in Habakkuk's life that just didn't seem to make sense, or didn't even seem fair at first sight. Before this God, Habakkuk now found himself standing in reverence. There was no longer any questioning of God like before. He had progressed from being intellectually perplexed over his problem to a position that was far above that. We find instead an attitude of reverence before God in a submission to his perfect will. Rather than badgering God with questions, we now find the prophet singing a prayer to God. But the question that we are forced to ask then is, since Habakkuk's circumstances haven't changed, why the dramatic change in his heart? From complaining to singing. See, something has happened in the interval between the prayer of the first chapter and this, the prayer in the third chapter. Whatever it was, it changed Habakkuk. What brought about this change? And what can we learn to strengthen our faith in the midst of the many confusing problems and trials that we face in life? The answers are found in this prayer that I read for you just a little bit earlier, that are recorded in Habakkuk chapter 3. Here we discover two life-changing responses to adversity that are modeled for us by this prophet Habakkuk as we continue this case study of Habakkuk. The first thing is to shift your focus from your fears to the faithfulness of God. In verse 2, we find that Habakkuk has taken his mind off of his fears of the coming invasion that he knew was going to happen. And he's focused his attention on the faithfulness of God's behavior. The first part of verse 2 says, Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, O Lord. In order to overcome his fears of this coming invasion, Habakkuk purposefully reminded himself of what he knew. Again, he went back to that solid footing of the things he believed and the things he knew about God. He knew that God is a loving God who had always fulfilled his covenant promises to care for his people and fulfill his purposes through them. In verses 3 through 15, the prophet reminded himself of God's faithfulness to his people as it was shown in some of the events throughout the history of Judah. Even though these verses are hard to understand because of their poetic structure, they're actually kind of hard to read and follow it because of that. I've practiced all week trying to get it out there. Don't allow that to keep you from seeing the big picture. And that is seeing the mighty and the awesome display of the power of God and the faithfulness of God as he led his people out of Egypt, through the wilderness, and then into the promised land. In verses 3-7, Habakkuk used some graphic Hebrew imagery to look back at God's mighty action at the Exodus. God is described as rising up from the southern mountain ranges of Tamon and Paran to rescue his people. God is described as a giant striding across the earth, startling the nations, shattering the mountains and collapsing the hills. Nature is described as violently convulsing and crumbling under God's awesome glory, splendor, and power. And then in verses 8-15, Habakkuk described God as a divine warrior who exercised judgment on behalf of his people. Verse 8 referred to his parting of the Red Sea and then later the Jordan River. Verse 11 referred to the miraculous victory that God gave Joshua over his enemies, the Amorites. That was recorded in Joshua chapter 10. See, the thing that sustained Habakkuk in the midst of the fear and perplexity that gripped him was shifting his focus away from his fears to the proven faithfulness of God. He looked at the past and he focused on God's great deliverances. And then in that, he found hope for the future. As a believer in Christ, you are meant to follow this example during times of adversity. You too are meant to find hope for your future in light of God's faithfulness to you in the past. You are meant to look back not only at God's great works of deliverance for Judah, but also to the way that God has been faithful to care for his people since then, including his care for you as well. And today, we have even far more to look back on than Habakkuk did. You can now look back on not only the things that God did for Judah, but you can look back and see how he has faithfully provided for an even mightier deliverance through the raising of Jesus Christ from the dead. And now he has proven himself over and over in your life to be a faithful God. Now, although God's faithfulness is a relatively easy concept to understand intellectually, the truth is that when it comes to applying it to your life, experientially and even personally, it becomes very difficult. One reason that so many find God's faithfulness toward us so difficult to grasp is because you have experienced the pain of a lot of human unfaithfulness in your life. You know what it's like to trust someone for something and then to have them let you down. Maybe someone once said to you, "You are my one and only." And then you discovered that he or she was seeing somebody else. Maybe your parents promised to show up for a school program, but they forgot about it or they got too busy. Maybe you trusted your boss for a raise and it never came through. You trusted a friend with a secret that friend didn't keep. And with each act of unfaithfulness towards you, you have subconsciously withdrawn into your own little world and developed these intricate strategies whereby you trust almost no one anymore, including God himself. Today, I want you to realize that no matter what you may be facing, no matter how many people have failed you in the past, God will never fail you. He will never let you down. He will always fulfill his promises to you. These mighty acts of God that are recorded in this text that I just read for you earlier are meant to show you that God is able to save those who look on him through faith and trust in his son, Jesus Christ. God has bound himself in a solemn covenant to you in Jesus, never to abandon you, always to provide for your real and deepest needs. Romans chapter 8, verse 32, Paul wrote, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, How will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? And yet I know that some of you today are facing problems that look outwardly like God has let you down. I know we've had discussions over these weeks. It's very hard to believe that God is faithful to his promises, and you are fearful of the future. You really doubt God's faithfulness, even though you know you shouldn't. And you feel guilty about your doubts. And you're wrestling with that. Well, let me share with you an encouraging word about your doubts. When doubts about God's faithfulness begin to flood your soul, don't despair. Don't get down on yourself because you doubt God. For see, there's a sense in which doubting God's faithfulness is a vital part of that necessary process by which God develops genuine faith in your life. There is a difference between the sin of unbelief and the difficulty of doubting. Jesus always made it a point to distinguish between doubt and unbelief. See, doubt is honest. Unbelief is obstinacy. Doubt is, I can't believe. Unbelief is, I won't believe. Doubt is looking for light. Unbelief is content in the darkness. Doubt is Mary asking, how can this be since I am still a virgin? Unbelief is Zechariah, even after he has prayed for a child and he's told that his wife is going to have a baby, doesn't believe. See, during those times of darkness, remember Habakkuk. Take your eyes off of your future fears and look back and reflect upon the faithfulness of God to you in the past. Learn to rest in the truth that the God who has always been faithful to you in the past has bound himself in covenant, always to be faithful to you in the future. And in so doing, you will find God transforming your fears into faith. The second thing, shift your focus from your purposes to the purposes of God. As long as Habakkuk focused his attention on his welfare and what he thought was right for himself, he was miserable. But once he took his mind off of his purposes and his desires, and he began to focus more on God's purposes and God's desires, he was set free, and he was transformed. In verse 2, the second half, we find that Habakkuk was no longer concerned for seeing his purposes and his plans succeed. What he wanted now more than anything else was for God's plan to succeed. And if that plan included the invasion of the Babylonians, then so be it. His prayer now was a prayer for God to do his perfect work of renewal, however or whatever that might be. The second half of verse 2, he reflected on God's purposes and he prayed, renew them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. Earlier, Habakkuk would have prayed that God would have changed his mind regarding this Babylonian invasion, not to pour out his wrath. See, that would have threatened Habakkuk's life work and brought pain into his life. But now, in humble submission, Habakkuk simply prayed, in wrath, remember mercy. There is a lot of confusion today about the purpose of the Christian life. There is a message going out that God's great goal for your life is that you be comfortable and happy, living out a wonderful plan, which includes no calamity, no evil, no tragedy, no sickness, no poverty, no personal pain. What? Exactly. That if you'll just trust God, all of your worries will be over. That if you'll just believe in Jesus, you'll never be defeated again. See, that teaching is not only unkind, it sets you up, but it's also not what the Bible teaches. Instead, there needs to be some honesty today. Someone needs to be bold enough to say, when you believe in Jesus Christ, you may very well step into a world of testing like you have never known before. The reason for that is that you will become the object of God's transforming love. And God, by His Holy Spirit, will begin forming the character traits of Jesus Christ in your life. And frankly, you cannot have them formed in you without undergoing the fire of pain and adversity, the refiner's fire. You see, God's great goal for your life is not that you are comfortable and satisfied and you feel good, but that your life bring glory and honor to Jesus Christ as you are more and more conformed to His character. And since that is God's goal for you, you can expect some pain in your life. When you suffer, that doesn't mean that you are being disobedient. In fact, it might mean that you are right in the very center of God's will for your life. John the Baptist, in prison, about to be beheaded. He was right in the safest place that he could be. Right in the center of God's will and right where God wanted him to be. See, the path of obedience is often marked by times of suffering and loss. See, God's purposes are to build internal character into your life, to give you a deep peace, to provide you with things money just cannot buy. We can all laugh. That's cool. Bye, Olivia. She's smiling. Security replaces insecurity. You receive purpose and a renewed direction. You gain a new understanding, compassion, and a wisdom you never had before. So remember, when you are going through seasons of uncertainty and perhaps even trial and difficulty, remember to shift your focuses. Follow the model of Habakkuk. And live by faith in God. So shift your focus from your fears to the faithfulness of God. And shift your focus from your purposes to the purposes of God.